Hello and welcome to the TaxCast from the Tax Justice Network. I'm Naomi Fowler. Coming up later.
The Panama Papers have changed the political landscape.
I think there's still hundreds of cases of criminal behavior that needs to be uncovered so that the population, the voters, can push their politicians for change.
We talk to the journalists who got the Panama Papers scoop and ask them for their thoughts 1 year on from when the scandal first hit the headlines. But first, here's a quick roundup of the tax justice news for this month. In Germany, after a vote in its upper house of parliament, it looks like that country will make its register of the real owners of companies public, and that will include multinational company ownership. In the United States, as President Trump prepares to cut taxes for the super rich and corporations, hundreds of thousands of citizens marched across the country on Tax Day calling for tax justice and demanding their president publish his tax returns. There were rallies in over 200 locations worldwide. In central London, protesters this month, including the Tax Justice Network, came together outside the offices of one of the big four accountancy firms, PricewaterhouseCoopers, asking them to end the part of their business that enables big companies to avoid millions in taxes every year. The UK Parliament has previously heard evidence that the firm knowingly marketed tax avoidance schemes with a 75% risk of being unlawful if they were ever tested in a court of law. Barclays Bank has breached its own rules on protecting whistleblowers after its chief executive used the bank's security team to try and hunt down the writer of anonymous letters trying to alert the bank internally to matters of concern. The newish chief executive was supposed to restore the bank's reputation, and now he's under investigation. And Swiss bank Credit Suisse is most definitively back on the naughty step after it was raided this month after a major global tax evasion investigation. We'll have more on that later. An investigation by Finance Uncovered and Global Witness has shown that Shell oil executives knowingly took part in bribery that cost the Nigerian people more than $1 billion. I wonder where that money is now. London? Switzerland? Or maybe in the United States? And finally, Australia's about to overtake Qatar as the world's biggest exporter of liquefied natural gas. But the Tax Justice Network in Australia has exposed the fact that projects owned and operated by Chevron, Shell and Exxon will never pay a cent of royalties unless the government takes action. They've pointed out that Australians are paying more tax on one beer than the oil and gas industry pays in petroleum tax on offshore gas in an entire year. Those are the news headlines. Now we're going to talk to John Christensen of the Tax Justice Network for his take on this month. Okay, John, so we've got to start this month with the Panama Papers. We're 1 year on, 11 million documents leaked a year ago, more or less. What have we actually gained? I mean, we've seen the United Kingdom supposedly leading the way with the public register, but of course, no trusts. Several other countries have committed that they're going to follow suit. United States has passed some regulations about identifying who owns what, but not really cracking down on individual states like Delaware and Nevada and all the secrecy that goes on there. Where are we now, 1 year later, in your view?
Ooh, so much has changed and yet so little has changed in such important areas. And you're right to focus on the US and the UK. They are the big tax haven economies, and we've seen very little progress there. You're right also to focus on the UK's failure to move on offshore trusts. They are at the heart of the kind of the big failure. Look, Panama Papers, we've had over 150 major investigations in over 79 countries. Tens of thousands of companies have been investigated. But it still remains ludicrously easy to create an offshore company, and at very low cost as well. And these offshore companies still don't disclose enough about who their real owners are. And so the problem remains. Some countries have moved and or are in the process of moving. We've seen countries like South Africa, Nigeria, Kenya move dramatically. Germany's moving in the right direction. UK's partially moved, but as you've said, we're not seeing any progress on trusts. And as far as the UK is concerned, the big problem lies with what's going to happen about their dependent territories. Cayman, British Virgin Islands, of course, British Virgin Islands were a big part of the so-called Panama Paper revelations. It should have been British Virgin Island revelations because they were the biggest provider of offshore shell companies in the disclosures. And in France, things have been stalled by a Supreme Court ruling. So, you know, we're not seeing enough signs of things moving forward. And also, we haven't seen enough sign of change coming from within the law profession or the bankers and so on, or the company formation agencies. Their professional associations haven't yet come forward with new guidelines to shape or nudge professional behaviour in the right direction. So we're not seeing enough progress there. And let's face it, the villains of the piece are the banks and the law firms that set this up, and not just Mossack Fonseca. And sadly, I don't see that many signs of high-level politicians really pushing for the kind of change that is needed. Certainly, we haven't seen it from the incoming US president. We haven't seen it in the UK. And as you said right at the start, they are politically the most important players here because they dominate the global tax haven economy.
Let's talk about the Swiss bank story. Okay. We've heard a lot about how Swiss banking secrecy is dead, which is news to us this month. We've had the Swiss authorities having to go into overdrive and sort of defend themselves back in damage control mode because all the things that the banks have said in the past when these huge scandals have hit is, well, you know, this is in the past, we've changed the way we do business and all the rest of it. And lo and behold, what do we get but another enormous banking scandal surrounding Credit Suisse, which has already been up to its neck in all kinds of dodgy business for as long as I can remember, really.
Look, yet again, as a whistleblower tip-off, the Dutch criminal investigators raided Credit Suisse at the end of March, and their investigations have now triggered further investigations by the authorities in Australia, France, Germany and Britain. According to the Dutch, information in their possession covers at least 55,000 people from other jurisdictions who had held accounts at Credit Suisse. That information has now been shared with other criminal and tax authorities. And a further somewhere around 4,000 Dutch citizens are captured in the data, and no doubt they'll be under investigation. At one level, this is a good news story, thanks to a whistleblower and cooperation from the Dutch authorities. Tens of thousands of tax cheats will be losing a lot of sleep in the coming weeks and months. Credit Suisse has been plagued by investigations, not least and especially in the United States, where it was fined $2.6 billion in 2014 after Credit Suisse admitted that it had not only been helping US citizens to cheat on their tax affairs, but had taken virtually no action whatsoever to prevent abuse of their own facilities by American account holders, to the extent that the US Attorney General Eric Holder, who investigated Credit Suisse, described their procedures, their internal procedures, as shamefully inadequate. Now, this is one of the world's biggest banks, and their internal procedures and their actions in trying to remedy support of criminal activity was described as shamefully inadequate by the most senior lawmaker in New York. So this is it's a pretty villainous bank. Credit Suisse have been trying to grab a very large share of what's known as the global wealth management market. Now, whenever I hear that term wealth management, red lights start flashing because I always think of wealth management as essentially being driven by helping high net wealth individuals and the ultra high net wealth individuals, so multimillionaires and billionaires, helping them to evade and avoid paying tax. Not just income tax, but also capital gains taxes, inheritance taxes, wealth taxes, taxes more generally. And this is a demographic, the high net wealth demographic, is a demographic particularly prone to tax evasion, to tax avoidance and white collar crime more generally. The bad news, and I think this is what we need to focus on, is that despite claims to the contrary, Swiss banks have still not felt sufficiently pressured to change their business banking model. And many rich people who are their clients still think they can get away with tax evasion. So if we really want to change banking practices, nothing short of withdrawing banking licences for lengthy periods will deter these banksters from this highly lucrative market.
Right, and it's interesting the Swiss Attorney General didn't even know these raids were going to happen. In their defence, Credit Suisse say that in 2011, they asked all their clients to prove their tax compliance, and they actually have lost quite a lot of business by people shifting their money somewhere else.
Well, that kind of reminds me of the old thing about God make me good, but not now, please. Are the bank clients going to say in written statement that, yes, they are evading tax? Or will they be a little bit more evasive about that? I'm sorry, criminals don't normally admit to their activity. I think Credit Suisse's internal investigations of their clients' activities were, frankly, not serious. If Credit Suisse and other Swiss banks, and in fact banks generally, want to ensure that their clients are not engaging in tax evasion, they must not only engage in thorough know-your-client procedures, which, amongst other things, means breaking the screens of secrecy behind trusts and foundations and so on, but they must also be prepared to share that information automatically with tax authorities around the world. And that's what we're not seeing at the moment. As far as the Swiss Attorney General is concerned, I'm afraid I think the Dutch were probably absolutely right to not alert the Swiss authorities that this investigation was going on, because I'm afraid the Swiss cannot be regarded as totally trustworthy. They still are too captive to their banking interests. And for that reason, I think it's absolutely right to not involve the Swiss authorities until such stage as the investigations have reached the point where you actually are going to engage in raids.
OK, let's talk about some interesting data now. Since 2015, EU banks have had to report publicly on the nature of their business on a country-by-country basis, which is something that the Tax Justice Network has been calling for all multinational companies. However, you can criticise the European Union. This kind of thing would never have happened without the EU bloc, probably, to bring this about. But what it does tell us is some very interesting things about what banks do, which formerly they were able to keep secret. One of the facts we now know is that Barclays, the fifth largest European bank, registered 555 million euros of its profits in Luxembourg, good old friend Luxembourg, and paid 1 million euros in taxes in 2015. And that is an effective tax rate of 0.2%. So we should start calling them Barclays, the 0.2%ers. These kind of things are pretty eye-opening, aren't they? If only we knew these things about all multinationals.
Well, I think this is the best news story of the month, actually, because this is a sign of success. And it's a Tax Justice Network success because we originated the idea and Richard Murphy was the person who worked it up and campaigned around having this standard. And it's also a sign of European Union's success in pushing forward on this. Look, since 2015, European banks have been required to publish country-by-country reports. And Oxfam has examined the country-by-country reports for the top 20 European banks and revealed that even though only 7% of the bank's staffs are employed in tax havens, 26% of their overall profit is booked to tax havens, suggesting either that bank staff employed in tax havens are significantly more productive, four times more productive than their colleagues in the other world, or perhaps more plausibly that the banks are shifting their profits and their profitable activities to tax havens like Luxembourg. According to Oxfam, the 20 banks involved in their study booked 26%, that's just over one quarter of their global profits, to tax havens, even though the tax havens involved accounted for just 12% of their global turnover. Now, perhaps not surprisingly, Ireland and Luxembourg feature prominently amongst the most preferred tax havens. Luxembourg was used to post almost $5 billion of profits in 2015, just for these 20 banks, which was more than the combined profits booked in Germany, Sweden, and the UK. Which again suggests to me that this is more about profit shifting than about the extraordinary hard work and productivity of the bank's employees in Dublin or Luxembourg. So overall, it shows how transparency measures like country-by-country reporting can reveal how multinational banks, and let's face it, all other multinational companies as well, can manipulate their accounts to shift profits. So the report shows how important this information is to investors, to regulators, to policymakers, to journalists, and to civil societies more generally.
Now that we know this information, how did it actually help us in stopping their behaviour? Because it's true that the regulators can see what they're doing, it's completely public, but these banks certainly seem to have Barclays, and these banks have really don't seem to have any shame.
You're quite right to say the banks and other multinational companies are totally without shame and without integrity in these matters, but perhaps we're looking at the wrong direction. At root, this is a political failure. It's a major failure of globalization, and globalization is threatened by populism, by backlash across the world. If our politicians seriously want to regain momentum around making globalization work for the general public rather than the interests of a tiny minority of very rich people who run and own big banks and big multinational companies, they now need to get serious about this issue of tax avoidance and crack down upon it. The means for doing this are straightforward. This boils down to nothing more than political will.
Thanks, John. John Christensen at the Tax Justice Network. Now it's time for the TaxCast special feature. As we've just been discussing, 1 year ago this month, the Panama Papers scandal exploded. The biggest leak in history, with more than 11 million documents passed to two journalists at German newspapers Süddeutsche Zeitung, Frederick Obermeier and Bastian Obermeier. They're not related, but probably feel like brothers by now, given the time they must have spent together since then. I interviewed them last year in edition 55 of the TaxCast, and it's well worth a listen. This month, we catch up with them again for their thoughts on the Panama Papers, 1 year later. Hi, both. So, first of all, congratulations on winning the Pulitzer Prize. That's just fantastic news and well-deserved.
Thank you.
I think the really interesting thing about the Panama Papers is that the offshore systems connected globally. I mean, it's an operation based on collaboration within a globalised industry. Journalists collaborated too, and the whole Panama Papers project was based on a globalised collaborative journalism model, which must have increased expertise in this area. And that's something that should really worry the offshore industry and the banks and financial services.
Yeah, we took the same means. We took the same means now. We saw that the world is way too globalised for one news outlet in one country to tackle it. The Panama Papers have shown the force of collaborative journalism, and we already saw in the wake of it that now there are many more journalists to do this, and this is something that also can shape our all future in a very good way.
And if I may add one point, I think we do already see that tax officials in different countries, they are also teaming up and meeting. For example, last week there was a meeting in Den Haag where more than a dozen European countries met also with EU tax officials and the Panamanian General Prosecutor to discuss the
Panama Papers.
And if you speak with participants of this meeting, they all tell you, well, this was unique. So many investigators of so many countries speaking about one single case and speaking about how to share information, how to learn from this. And that shows me that the officials and investigators are also learning from our model.
And what do you think are the biggest successes of the Panama Papers so far?
Well, in my opinion, the biggest success of the Panama Papers is that there is even now, more than 1 year later, still international debate about tax havens and about non-transparent jurisdictions. That there is commission in the European Parliament, that there is more than 10,000 investigations all around the world based on Panama Papers information. I think the Panama Papers have shown that tax havens are not only about taxes, but about tax evasion, tax minimization, but also about covering up of other crimes, for example, sanctions breaching, of corruption, of money laundering. And I think that's very important.
Yeah, the world has reacted and there have been mass demonstrations and this whole awareness is still on. I didn't expect all this. We had reactions from Vladimir Putin and Barack Obama. We had mass demonstrations. We had people who had to step back. We have a whole new development of fight against tax injustice. We won the Pulitzer Prize. The Icelandic prime minister had to go after the people of Iceland showed that they were not okay with the way he dealt with offshore companies. That's one of the bigger successes that we had. The Panama Papers have changed the political landscape in some countries. I mean, in Pakistan, they are still discussing if the prime minister has to go. And it already has changed laws. The US just make a new law based on the Panama Papers experiences. There's a new law being made in Germany. We don't like it a lot, but it's better than what we had before. But of course, there can be more change.
Sure, sure. And we're still seeing progress on public registers of the real owners of companies moving forward slowly. The UK now has one. Lots of other countries are on their way to making theirs public too. Tell me, what were your biggest surprises in the last year with the Panama Papers?
For me, it was a shock that Edward Snowden tweeted some minutes before our publication that there's a new project coming. And I still wonder how he realized and got knowledge about it. That was a big surprise for me, but in the end, it was a good surprise because it built up an audience for the Panama Papers. Good publicity, having Edward Snowden, the famous whistleblower, tweeting about the Panama Papers.
I didn't think that anything would happen in Panama, honestly. When they started their investigation and they had the long raid at the offices of Mossack Fonseca, the Panamanian law firm in the mid of the Panama Papers, I thought this is only show, this is only big theater. And now the two founders of Mossack Fonseca, Jürgen Mossack from Germany and Ramon Fonseca, are both in jail and are awaiting the charges against them. So I was really surprised about that. I can't say that I am happy that people are in jail, but I think it's a good idea for Panama to really seek justice and to take the laws they have and use it. Because they are friends with the president. They know all the elites. They are in this small circle that is governing the country for many years. So this is really a big surprise.
Okay. And is there anything that's disappointed you with the Panama Papers story?
Frederick here. For me, it was shocking to see that there are still countries out there where freedom of press is not as developed as it should be, so that huge parts of populations did not even hear from the Panama Papers, and they did not hear about the mighty and powerful in their countries being involved in the Panama Papers. For example, there was recently, or some months ago, a survey in Russia, and it showed that there's a huge percentage of the Russian population that has not read or heard about the Panama Papers, and that has not read and heard about the involvement of Sergei Rodugin, one of the best friends of Vladimir Putin. And that shows me that there are still countries where people should fight for freedom of press.
And protection for whistleblowers is one thing in particular that hasn't changed, right? I mean, I know you can't tell me about your contact with John Doe, the Panama Papers whistleblower, that the protection, the lack of protection, is a serious issue.
Well, we definitely need all around the world a better protection of whistleblowers. For me, it's a real scandal that the LuxLeaks whistleblowers face trial whereas one of the architects of the system of Luxembourg, the financial system, Mr. Juncker, is still in office and didn't really have to explain him. That for me shows that there's something going wrong. In general, there are so many countries, if we speak with colleagues all around the world, we always hear the same. In our country, there's not enough protection for whistleblowers. We should all be aware of the fact that whistleblowers like Antoine Deltour, Edward Snowden, or John Doe a lot, I hope that many people stand up and ask and push for more protection of whistleblowers.
And as long this hasn't happened, we have to tell all the whistleblowers that would approach us that if they want our advice would be stay in the dark. Don't make your name public. Don't go out with your face. Because, yeah, it's way too dangerous still. And nobody wants to end up in Moscow or in a US high security prison.
No. You've explained to me when I last spoke to you on the TaxCast why you can't put all the Panama Papers data out there in the public domain because of German law and the sheer logistics of dealing with 11 million documents. But I imagine there's plenty of work still to be done with the data, right? And journalists are working on that still. So what's next? What do you expect to be your future focus?
I think there's still plenty of work out there for us. There's still hundreds of cases of criminal behavior that needs to be uncovered. And I think there is still so much wrongdoing that needs to be public so that the population, the voters, can push their politicians for change. But one special thing that I think will or could be more in the focus in the future is the vehicle of trusts. For example, in Germany, if you ask people what a trust is, I would guess the majority of the people would tell you that it is an instrument that is only used for financing, for example, the university of your daughter or of your son. And if you then tell them that there's many, many cases where there's a proven misuse of trusts, they are like, what? Really? And I think that's an important issue that should be covered more in the future.
Right. The Tax Justice Network would definitely agree with that, especially given how central trusts are to the UK secrecy industry and the way they've been blocking trusts from transparency measures, not to mention Brexit. The US too, the United States too, these two countries are central to the whole issue, right? That's how we see it.
Yeah. Well, I think everybody will be very interested in the future to have stories from those two centers, from the UK and the US, because the UK now, after the Brexit, we see that there are people, there are politicians who want to move the UK more in the direction of a tax haven as the UK already is. And in the US, because of their system with the many states, say Nevada or other tax havens inside the US, this is still very interesting, and it seems to be very interesting to just, you know, beat on the small islands that act as tax havens, but ignore the UK and the US. So we're not going to do this.
Good. I think one of the things politicians can't do anymore is deny that there's a problem or hope it will go away. And I think people in the wealthier countries of the world are understanding now that corruption isn't something that just happens somewhere else.
Well, we saw in the Panama Papers that the politicians in the West, in countries like Germany, I think there's a new way of corruption now that's more systemic. It's more like, you know, some politician waits a couple of weeks after he loses his job in politics, and then he goes to the board of directors of a big company, and then another one and another one, and he's making millions. And he's using all his contacts that he developed while in politics. So I think this is real corruption too, but it's not illegal. And what we saw most in the Panama Papers was that politicians from South America, they still do it the old way, the old traditional way. They get an offshore bank account, they get the money there, and they help the people who want favors from them. But it's another kind of corruption, the bold version of corruption there. When we started out with the Panama Papers, we heard so many people say, but it's legal and the laws are like they are. And now we have so many examples of utterly illegal use of the offshore system, from clearly corrupt deals over cartels and arms smugglers and sanctions breakers and. So if somebody dares to say now this is not illegal, we have many examples to make politicians take that back.
Okay, right. That's all we've got time for. Thank you, Frederick and Bastian. Thank you. It's been really great talking to you.
Thanks a lot. It was a pleasure talking to you.
If you haven't read Bastian and Frederick's book on the Panama Papers yet, do. It's a fascinating insight on how the offshore world's been working behind gold-plated closed doors. An updated version of their book's just been published, so even better. You've been listening to The Tax Cast. We'll be back next month.